This podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. The three-pack is back. The three-pack is a great value, and the top three uses for the air purifier are to eliminate odors, allergens, and air pollutants. Get the three-pack today at EdenPureDeals.com and put in code word Howie3.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
The Millennial with the Mic is the most listened to midday show in Boston. You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, the Spectator, and the Daily Mail. Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Get ready, pal.
It's Boston's number one midday show, The Grace Curley Show.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. Darvio Morrow joins me now, and he is the co-host of The Outlaws Radio. He's also a contributor at Newsweek, and you can follow him on Twitter, which for a lot of people is the most important thing because they want to figure out where they can read all of his work, at DTheKingPin. He got rave reviews last time he was on the program, and we're so happy to have him back. Darvio, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Darvio, I want to start today with your take on Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan. She was going, then she wasn't going, and now it appears that she will end up going. What do you think is the best move for the speaker to make, and do you think there will be fallout if she proceeds with this trip?
So I think she has to go. I mean, at this point, first of all, this whole thing shouldn't have been as public as it was, from my understanding of, and from reports I've read. It was actually the White House who leaked it, which is outrageous. But she has to go. I mean, we can't be in a position where the Chinese government is able to tell our elected officials where they can and cannot go. And, you know, for me, I was outraged. I know you saw some of my tweets about it over the weekend. That a Chinese propagandist essentially threatened to shoot Nancy Pelosi's plane down. And it doesn't matter whether you like Nancy Pelosi or not. I'm not the biggest fan in the world of Nancy Pelosi, of a lot of the positions that she holds on issues, but ain't no way in the world that somebody should be able to threaten our Speaker of the House, the third in line for the presidency, and get away with it. And then when asked about it, the Biden administration had a weak, feckless response. It was pitiful. So it's gotten to this point where she has to go. She has to go. And we as a government should have made sure that the Chinese government knew that any attempt to do anything close to that is an act of war, and we will respond accordingly. But in my view, I don't see any way, like, she has to go now.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the Biden administration's response, because I remember seeing a video of Biden, you know, in his aviators walking outside looking confused. And when asked about it, he said something along the lines of, well, the military doesn't think it's a good idea. And I just thought, what a sloppy answer to something that's a very big deal, that you should at the very least say no comment and kind of, you know, get yourself together and figure out where you stand on this. But that was a big part of this problem. As we talk about the Biden administration, Darvio, my next question for you involves this Inflation Reduction Act. I know it's a ridiculous name. I think Republicans should rebrand it like Democrats do with bills they don't like. But this Inflation Reduction Act, are you surprised that Joe Manchin jumped on board with this? And how do you think regular Americans, people who are going to be voting in November, how do you think they're going to respond when they really start to understand what's inside this package?
So I'm not necessarily surprised that Joe Manchin got on board. I do believe that Joe is a decent guy from a bygone era who's really trying to get things done. I just think he might have gotten played on this. I mean, he believes that this bill is not going to contribute to inflation, that it's going to actually bring it down, when, you know, there are studies that are coming out now saying that it's actually going to increase inflation a little bit in the near term, and in the long term, it's going to have basically no impact whatsoever. So we're spending all of this money for really no reason at all. And, you know, I think the average American where the Democrats are in trouble with this bill is that they have a problem of overpromising and underdelivering, and they're continuing to do it. So I think that once when you call a bill the Inflation Reduction Act, if you pass that bill and sign it into law, and by the time people start voting, inflation is still high, they're going to be mad as hell. And like they're going to take it out on you even more so than they already are planning on. You know what I mean? So
yes.
I think the issue that they have is, oh, this bill, not only does it not do what they say it's going to do, but they're over-promising and under-delivering again. They're going to end up with even more disappointed people.
Yeah, and the White House director of the National Economic Council, Brian Deese, he is one of the Avengers at the White House, one of the adults back in charge, who is trying to run cover for Joe Biden and all of these terrible decisions. And one of the things that they have to talk about are these prices that are hitting Americans and really hurting a lot of people out there. Darvio, I wanted to play for you Brian Deese's comment. It really took my breath away, and it actually reminded me of, reading a little bit of the Vogue spread on Zelensky and his wife. And one of the things Zelensky said in that spread was that COVID is nothing, gas prices are nothing in comparison to the war they're going through in Ukraine. And I thought, well, there's definitely truth to that. But at the same time, comparing your struggles with somebody else's struggles to kind of delegitimize what they're going through isn't always a great way to win friends and influence people. And I thought that Brian Deese was going along the same lines with these next comments. Let's play cut 12.
Well, look, I think that our economy is more resilient to the types of challenges that we've faced. For example, you know, with respect to food, we're a net exporter of agricultural commodities, and obviously the high prices are hitting Americans very hard, but in a way that is different from some places that are facing famine, for example.
So first, Darvio, we were told from the Washington Post to lower our expectations with the supply chain crisis. And now we're being told, yeah, prices are tough, but at least it's not famine. What do you make of this?
So Grace, you're a communicator. I'm a communicator. If it were me, every person in charge of communication in the White House should be fired. I don't understand why they continue to make these same dumb mistakes. Part of the issue, when you have an issue where people think you don't feel their pain, the worst thing you could do is say, well, what about those starving people? Like, don't do that. Like, that is the dumbest thing you can do. It's like they're stuck in this bubble and they don't know how to get out of it. And they keep showing the American people how out of touch they really are. And like, look, we understand politics, right? Nobody's going to stand up there and say, yeah, you know what? We really blew that one, right? Like, they're not, we understand that. They're not going to do that. But what the Biden administration is doing when it comes to the economy, they are insulting people's intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the quickest ways to piss people off is to insult their intelligence. And I think that is the problem that they're having. They're showing themselves to be aloof. They're showing themselves to be out of touch, to be the same stereotypical limousine caviar liberal that most people don't like.
Absolutely. Really well said. I'm speaking with Darvio Morrow. You can follow him on Twitter at DTheKingpin. And Darvio, another thing I wanted to talk about here, and it's a little bit of a different direction. There's a Senate race happening in Georgia, and there was a comment, and the last time we had you on, and a lot of people remember this because the interview did really well for us, we talked a little bit about Rex Chapman and a comment he made about the fact that Clarence Thomas would only last 20 to 30 seconds in an NBA locker room. And I remember we discussed this idea that liberals think as long as they're criticizing someone with the wrong point of view, they can be as racist as they want to be. With that being said, I would like to play for you a sound cut from Ellie Mistal on MSNBC about Herschel Walker. This is cut one, please.
Walker has the backing of the Republicans. Now you ask, why are Republicans backing this man who's so clearly unintelligent, who so clearly doesn't have independent thoughts? But that's actually the reason. Walker's right. Gonna do what he's told. And that's what Republicans like. That's what Republicans want from their Negroes. to do what they're told. And Walker presents exactly as a person who lacks independent thoughts, lacks an independent agenda, lacks an independent ability to grasp policies.
Now, Darvio, really putting aside how you feel about Herschel Walker and his chances in Georgia and any of that, let's just talk about the substance of that generalization from Ellie Mistall.
You know, it's very interesting to me when black progressives do this, when they single out, you know, black Republicans or black conservatives and say they don't have an independent thought. Meanwhile, they are shucking and jiving for white progressives every chance they get. I don't understand that logic. You cannot tell me that you are pro-black and yet you tear down that black man like that. You can disagree with his policies. You can disagree with his politics. All of that is fair game. But for him, it's like they always go to the lowest common denominator. And that drives me nuts. Because the same thing that they accuse others of doing is what they're doing. At the end of the day, is he on MSNBC if he was a conservative? No. Is he on MSNBC if he was a moderate? No. You're on MSNBC, I believe he writes for The Nation as well, because you told their party line. So at the end of the day, if you want to have a conversation about why there are incentives for black people on both sides of the political aisle to toe party line, we could talk about that. But you don't want to have that conversation. What you want to do is say, oh, look at those black conservatives. Look at those black Republicans. They're towing the party line. They don't have any independent thought at the same time while you're over there tap dancing for white liberals. It drives me nuts.
Yeah, and Darvio, one other thing I wanted to add in here, and it brings me back to when we had you on about Rex Chapman, is this idea. You talked about going to the lowest common denominator. What I find really offensive about it, too, is that it seems to be okay for liberals to question someone's blackness if they think that it doesn't align with their point of view. And I would just love your take on that, because it's really disturbing that just is allowed now, you know, in the public discourse, as long as it's against a conservative.
Yeah, it's always been there. I think, you know, social media, like everything social media touches, it has elevated bad ideas. So now everybody gets to be exposed to it. I think part of the issue is that there is this idea, there is this thought process among some progressives and some liberals that they are the arbiters of what is good for black people. And anyone who says anything that is contrary to what their stated position is therefore an affront to black people. And that is a complete, ironically, a whitewashing of how black people really think. If you, the thing that's really interesting is that the black pundits that you see on television, a lot of the liberal ones, they actually represent the minority in the black community. You know, in according to Pew Research, over 69-70% of African Americans self-identify as either moderate or conservative. So it is the black liberals who are actually the minority, but they are the ones who are always being the arbiter of who is and isn't black. And that is just an attitude among progressivism in general. And like, look, on social media and on shows like this and on my own show, you know, I beat up on white progressives a lot. But the full phrase that I use sometimes is white progressives and their black enablers. It's both of them.
Darvio, we love having you on the program. Everyone can follow Darvio at D the Kingpin. Listen to his show. It's at The Outlaws Radio. You can find that on Twitter, but obviously you can listen to it wherever you find your podcast. Darvio, we hope to have you on again soon.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. It looks like history is repeating itself. Today, Biden's economy is mirroring that of Jimmy Carter. He keeps denying it, but it's becoming more and more like a mirror. The parallels are uncanny. Under Carter, both the stock market and the dollar lost more than half their value. The price of oil quadrupled, the economy tanked, and inflation ran rampant. It was the malaise that Jimmy Carter used to talk about. Those who owned precious metals in the 1970s saw the value of the gold rise 1,300%. The big difference between Carter and Biden was Carter wasn't trying to legislate the taxing of retirement accounts, merging them with Social Security, or replacing the dollar bill with digital money as Democrats are attempting to do today. What we are seeing is a once-in-every-generation opportunity. Some analysts predict gold as high as $5,000. A network analyst predicts $15,000 in 3 years. Get Monetary Gold's complimentary protection guide if you want to protect your savings from greedy socialists like Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer. Monetary Gold is rated a top five with the BBB for 22 years, consumer affairs, and retirement living. My listeners who open a qualified account now will receive up to $5,000 in free gold or silver. Call 888-271-0653 and ask for their free guide. Again, that's 888-271-0653. Or visit them at monetarygold.com/grace. That's monetarygold.com/grace. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show.
A tiara when I came in here, because if you happen upon it, will you have Lady Pennyface retrieve it and send it post hence?
She's the epitome of class, style, and sophistication. She's Grace Curley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. Today's poll question is brought to you by Fairway Financial. Preparation and planning is the key to your retirement future. Visit fairwayfinancial.net. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Are you excited lawmakers have reached a deal on sports betting in Massachusetts?
All right, so I'm getting a lot of texts about this. 339 says, Grace, with a 15 to 20% tax that effectively will make everyone a loser who gambles, you'll have to win over 75% of your bets to make money. Experts can't even do that. Shame on the legislators. This is a money grab. That is from 339. You know what? That's convincing.
That
if I hear money grab, I'm going to change my vote. So I'm going to say I'm saddened, not gladdened about this.
98% no, I say no, I am not excited. 31% say you bet I am.
That's one thing I will give myself credit for. If I feel strongly about something and I have all the facts, I will stand by it. But if I don't have all the facts, I'm very open to changing my mind. There is a story here, and this is a perfect example, because I had this whole thing planned out. I was going to talk about Joe Manchin and Paul Krugman, and we will get to a little bit of that. But Howie Carr put me on to a story here from the New York Times, and it really is insane. So I think I'm going to start reading it in this segment and then carry it over to the next one, because it's going to take me a while to get through. How did a two-time killer get out to be charged again at age 83? This reads like a horror story. Anyone who listens to this show knows I'm a true crime fanatic. This is something that you might see on Netflix because it is just that grim and that scary. Marceline Harvey is accused of dismembering a woman in Brooklyn. Her life was defined by a tormented relationship with women and herself and a simmering anger. In 1985, Marceline Harvey left the body of a victim near an entrance to Central Park. The person before the parole panel in June 2019 was tall and slim, in far better shape than 81 years of her life might have suggested. Mild and polite, the supplicant seemed nothing like the murderer who had spent decades in prison, first for shooting a girlfriend dead in 1963, and then for stabbing another in 1985. Stuffing her corpse into a bag and leaving it in Central Park. I'm no longer that person. How many times have you heard that? The inmate told the parole board commissioners, despite misgivings, they would rule in favor of release. 2.5 years after leaving the correctional facility, Marceline Harvey was accused again, charged with killing Susan Layden, 68. Parts of Miss Layden's body were found in March inside a shopping cart in East New York, stuffed in a bag. In Miss Harvey's apartment, investigators found a bloody mop, a tub full of towels, and a box for an electric saw. For 7 decades leading up to her arrest, Miss Harvey navigated New York's intricate criminal justice bureaucracy. She confronted the system in some moments and manipulated it in others. Behind her was a trail of crime so grisly that for decades, parole officers refused to let her out. Now Ms. Harvey has pleaded not guilty to murder. We'll get into this. This is really a grim tale, but I think people will want to hear this. 844-500-4242. A lot more to get to today, so don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. Now, as I look at Fox News, it says Soros defends progressive DAs as crime soars. And we've been hearing about this across the country, whether it be in L.A. or San Francisco or in Manhattan. There is there's a spike in crime, and there doesn't seem to be any desire by these DAs to put people in prison and to keep them in prison for a longer amount of time. In fact, a lot of people get out within hours of committing their crime. We saw that with Lee Zeldin, who's running for governor of New York. He was talking about the bail issue in New York and how people are being let out within hours. And he was, a man ran up on stage and tried to stab him. And that man was let out of prison before the end of the day. It's really scary, and it's also absurd what we're allowing to happen in this country right now. And a few stories popped up on my desk this morning. Spam in a box. New York City store locks up food to prevent theft. This is a new one on me because I've been to stores before. Most of the stores I go to, they have razors locked up, sometimes eyelashes. I like to get some fake eyelashes every now and then. And those are locked up because they're expensive and they're easy.
They're locking up my toothpaste. Yeah.
They're easy to take, easy to, you know, they're small, but they're expensive. So that's a prime pick for a burglar. You notice I struggle with that word. It's certain words for me when they've got those R's in them. Burglar, the world juror. Yeah, but it's something you see. But spam, I wouldn't think would be a problem. Spam, in fact, I think you could leave out and... If it were, I think most criminals would steer clear. Who's stealing spam?
Hey, it's cheap meat. And if you can't get expensive meat, you may as well get the cheap meat. Nothing wrong with spam.
Have you had spam? I've never eaten it.
I've had spam quite a bit, yeah. It's actually, I believe Pacific Island food has a lot of spam in it. But yeah, it's ham-ish.
It tastes fine. You know what? I want to throw that out to the callers. For people.
For canned meats, it's actually pretty good.
Well, now we're lowering the bar, aren't we?
I mean, look, if I had my choice.
That's called damning with faint praise. For canned meats, it's pretty good.
If I had my choice, would I eat spam? No, I would like to eat, you know, a nice prime cut of meat. But spam's fine.
But if you have no
especially
other
fried
options.
Spam, that's actually pretty good.
All right, well, let's let the callers weigh in on that, and sure. We'll see. Because sometimes I trust you so fully. And I get myself in trouble. Sometimes I think you need to be fact-checked. You've gotten too comfortable being the fact-checker of this show. You think you can say whatever and no one's going to dispute it. I think people might when it comes to spam.
Not that gross. Fact-check true.
Fact-check? I don't know about that. Did you see people are fact-checking now? I guess there was a video they made because Joe Biden was wandering. Yes. Joe Biden was wandering off the stage and they made this video where they played the ice cream truck song, the Ed Markey song. Do-do-do-do-do. How's the song go? And it showed Joe Biden wandering off to get the ice cream truck. And they actually fact checked that. And Stephen Miller had a great point. He said they're fact checking this stuff because they know it's believable enough that people would actually think it's true. That's the only reason you'd fact check it. Otherwise, you'd say, oh, that's clearly a joke. That's a meme. We don't need to fact check that. No, they do need to fact check it. People are already starting to call in to dispute your claims, Jared. So get ready for that. So spam is being locked up, and according to Jared, good, because it is just that delicious. We need to keep it protected. On a separate note, a New York City shoplifter was arrested and released over 100 times and then finally sent to jail for assaulting police. I remember this story because this person who they're labeling as a professional booster was arrested over 100 times. And I remember because one of the cops was interviewed by the New York Post and said, what are they waiting for? 200 arrests to hold her? When does it stop? It's making a mockery of the system. And also, an update for you, in Chicago this weekend, at least 48 people were shot during the weekend in Mayor Lori Lightfoot, Chicago. At least 48 people were shot, five of them fatally, very scary stuff. But the reason I bring this all up is because of the story in the New York Times, which really goes into the problem with our criminal justice bureaucracy, as they put it. This one's zeroing in on New York's intricate criminal justice bureaucracy, but I think it applies to a lot of things. Before we dive into this, and I do want to pretty much read the whole thing, full disclosure, I will be leaving some stuff out for time's sake. If you want to read it, I think Howie probably put it in his Howie's homework for the day, because it's a very compelling read. But we will be leaving out just a few details, but I think I'm giving you the most important stuff. But before we go to that, we've got someone on the line who wants to discuss this. Kevin, I know you want to talk about the spam. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great, and as far as spam, I'm going to tell you, I like the stuff.
A man of culture.
In a frying pan with your eggs in the morning, it's good. And if you don't believe that it's a very popular item, as it was alluded to, go to Hawaii. They actually will have an aisle in the grocery store from one end to the other of spam, all different types, whether it's like sriracha or, you know, spicy this or peppery or mixed. It's like the bologna of deli meats. You know what I mean?
That's not super persuasive for me because I'm not really a bologna girl. But what I will say, Kevin, is if two more people call up with the same opinion as Kevin, who are pro spam, if we have two more callers, I will do a live spam taste test on the air this week. By the end of the week, I will find a can of spam and we will do a live taste test because I've never had it before. I'll taste it and then Jared can finish it off.
Okay.
That's a fair deal. You're getting free spam out of the deal.
I'm fine with that.
All right, but there's got to be two more callers who are pro spam. Otherwise, I'm not going down this road. All right, so let's get back to this story here. So this is, I can't decide if it's Marceline or Marceline.
Marceline is the usual pronunciation. So
you are truly a Renaissance man.
I am.
You know about spam. Well, you know about pronunciations of Marceline. What can't you do?
There was a character Marceline in Adventure Time, which is a cartoon that my nephew watched.
Now things are starting to make sense. All right, so Marceline Harvey is accused of dismembering a woman in Brooklyn. And I gave you a little bit of her background here, but let's dive back into this. If you missed it, Marceline Harvey is 83 years old. And the headline of the story is, how did a two-time killer get out to be charged again at age 83? Now, decades worth of police documents and court records detail the life of Miss Harvey, a transgender woman who transitioned at some point after her release from prison. Central to her tale are more than three decades of parole board minutes obtained through a FOIA. In them, she insists that authorities exaggerated evidence, changes stories about crimes she admitted, and veers between contrition and blaming those she killed. The records include several examples of her harassing or attacking women throughout her life. She was accused of attempted rape at 14. The victim was an 8-year-old girl. Miss Harvey, who by her own account struggled with her mental health, said she had to choke down rage when women challenged her manliness before she transitioned, making fun of her soft voice. A homeless shelter worker and people close to Miss Layden, that's the woman who's been murdered, questioned whether, despite her gender identity, Miss Harvey should have been placed in a homeless shelter for women, given her history of attacking and murdering them. Those women are the women questioning whether Miss Harvey should have been placed in a female shelter. They're about to be canceled. Can you say not woke? Speaking from Rikers to the New York Post, Miss Harvey referred to herself as two personas, one a violent male named Harvey Marceline, the name she used for most of her life and is included in court records, and the other a soft-spoken woman named Marceline Harvey. But now it goes into transgender people are far more likely to become victims of violence, not perpetrators. And it cites data that suggests that more than half of transgender people who stay in shelters encounter harassment. And the crucial question surrounding Miss Harvey's case is less complicated. How was someone who had killed twice before allowed the chance to kill again? Now, Ms. Harvey had completed therapy and coursework and had letters of support from organizations. These organizations, man, these are the organizations that really blow my mind. You know, like the ones that Kamala Harris talks about supporting, the ones that get people out of prison. I have no problem with prison reform, by the way. You know, you look at, I'm blanking on her name here, the woman who Trump helped get out of jail. Is it Alice Marie, I believe? But if someone's in prison for 30 years for, you know, a marijuana charge, I understand that the prison system could use reform.
Alice Marie Johnson.
But in these cases, this transgender person is a violent, violent person. All right, so let's get back to this. The prison system had deemed her unlikely to commit a violent offense. Now, this is a quote from the policy director for the Data Collaborative for Justice, who said, "Someone committing such a tragic and violent crime at this age is so incredibly rare that it would be very difficult for anyone reviewing this case to even consider." But let's look at what actually is this person's history. Because would it be that crazy to consider? Born in 1938, Ms. Harvey spent her youth in New York, the child of a single mother. Even as a teenager, she displayed a propensity for violence, particularly toward women, and had a complicated gender identity. Ms. Harvey was treated at Catholic Charities, which paired clergy and lay people with troubled children after the attempted rape at 14. As a young adult, Ms. Harvey, described then as a tall, slender male, lived with her mother and earned $75 a week operating copy machines. She had a girlfriend, Jacqueline Bonds, but her life was chaotic. Ms. Harvey drank often, took cocaine, regularly assaulted Ms. Bonds, and was in and out of psychiatric care. In early 1963, Ms. Harvey was again accused of rape, this time as a 24-year-old. The accusation set off a spasm of violence. That April, Ms. Harvey killed Ms. Bonds, who had been scheduled to appear before a grand jury considering the case. Ms. Harvey shot her point blank in their crowded Manhattan apartment, chased her as she staggered through the kitchen and living room, and shot her twice more before she collapsed, according to the board minutes and a police report. And again, I know this is kind of gruesome, but I think it's important to understand just how violent people are who are being let out of prison. During two decades behind bars, she tried to persuade the parole board to free her. Skeptical officials as far back as 1984 cited her aggression toward women. Even in prison, one noted, Ms. Harvey had sent inappropriate letters to a candy striper hospital volunteer. That is all in the past. And when I became aware that this pattern I was creating, I cut it loose, Ms. Harvey said. Weeks later, the board freed Ms. Harvey, and she returned to New York. In the early morning hours of October 30th, 1985, listen to this, Jared, this is wild. Roberto Romano was in the lobby of the Cambridge Residence Hotel in Harlem, where he lived. He was smoking reefer, as he later told police. When the tenant of room 602 passed, pushing a shopping cart that held a garbage bag, the bag ripped on the first step and blood came out. Hours later, a man walking on Manhattan's Upper West Side saw a dark plastic bag at the entrance to Central Park, dripping blood. He tore it open, revealing a pair of legs. The victim, identified as Anna Laura Sierra, had been stabbed repeatedly, tied with a rope and wrapped in plastic. This goes on to talk about more. I'll keep reading this if people are liking it. We have a lot of people on the line for spam right now, though. And we will get to that as well, because it's all important. We're not going to...
Spam calls, am I right?
We're being spammed with these calls right now. Isn't this insane, though? This is like serial killer type of stuff. This is really sick, sick stuff. And all this person had to do was say, I've changed. And she's not only let out, but she's sent to a women's shelter where these women are basically being served up on a silver platter. Wacky. We all knew it was coming, and it finally has. The real estate frenzy has really slowed down due to inflation, interest rates, and the overall economy. For sale signs are sitting in the ground longer, buyers are backing out of deals, and large crowds of buyers have disappeared. If you plan to divest some of your valuable assets, your real estate, then act now while demand is still hanging in there. Holding off selling or even renting your property could be a comfortable short-term solution, but not if you sell in a year or two for a lot less money. So don't hesitate. Sell today at auction under your terms. At JJ Manning Auction, your property sells as quickly as possible through a marketing plan and recipe which has stood the test of time. For over 45 years, and more importantly, in every type of economy, JJ Manning consistently creates a competitive environment with cash buyers who are ready to close with no contingencies. To learn more on how to get your residential, commercial, or land property sold, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or visit jjmanning.com. That's jjmanning.com or call 800-521-0111. We'll be right back with your calls. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
Follow Grace on Twitter at G underscore Curly.
You don't say ham, you say spam. Spam is real spice. Ham, you don't say ham, you say spam.
Why do I feel like you're sticking your finger on the scale here, Jared? You seem a little biased. Now you're playing spam propaganda, spam-ganda.
It's commercial. It's
sure,
paid.
Sure.
Propaganda is never paid, Grace.
All right, just really quickly before we go to the calls, I want to follow up on this story. So eventually, charged with first-degree murder, Ms. Harvey struck a plea deal with the Manhattan District Attorney Office for a first-degree manslaughter and was returned to prison in 1986. So for 35 years and across 15 hearings, parole officials denied Ms. Harvey's freedom. But eventually, she found two commissioner panel that decided to give her another chance. And that December, so now it's 2019, Ms. Harvey left prison. She was given another chance because she gave them her word as a Biden that she was not going to do this again. It is unclear. I'm kidding, of course. She's no relation. She gave them her word as a Marceline Harvey. It is unclear where their paths first crossed, but she met this other woman, her latest victim. And this all happened after her 2019 release when she sought housing in the Bronx. Ms. Harvey presented as a mild-spoken, very tall black man, said Ann Brennan, the nurse practitioner who ran the intake. I said, well, why are you in the women's shelter? Ms. Brennan told Ms. Harvey that placing her in a women's shelter seemed like a bad idea, given her history of killing women. Despite her objections, Ms. Brennan said her supervisors allowed Ms. Harvey entry. And this is the quote. Apparently, his feelings and identity were far more important than all the other women that were terrified of him. There you go. That really sums up the whole story now, doesn't it? All right, really quickly, give us your five-second take on spam. Karen, you're up first. Go ahead, Karen.
Hi. I think it's fabulous, but I always have to make my family something else. And I fry it the first night I have it with macaroni and cheese, and then the next day I put it in grilled cheese.
Perfect. Thank you, Karen. So now we got two people who are pro-spam. Steve, you're up next. You could really guarantee the taste test. What do you think, Steve? Steve? Oh, okay. Dawn, you're next up. If Dawn likes spam, then we're doing a taste test. Go ahead, Dawn.
No. I picked up a can of spam, okay, and I believe there are 8 servings. Then I looked at the ingredients of one serving. Look into your ingredients before you eat it, because there's a lot of stuff that I find that, if I'm on a diet, I got to stay the hell away from it. If I'm looking at anything in fat and everything else, just look at the ingredients.
Now,
I'm against it because of that. I know they use it in their service, and people might be able to doctor it, but just look at the ingredients.
So
that's it.
Dawn is anti-spam, guys, so that really puts this to rest. We needed one more person to be pro-spam, and we didn't get it, which means unless someone calls in the next 10 seconds and is pro-spam, I will not be tasting spam on this show. How do you feel about that, Jared? You look sad.
I'm in an area where they don't lock it up, so I can get my spam fix if I need to. But
I feel like I dodged
a bullet.
It is
disappointing that I cannot share the wealth with you.
That is true, Jared. That is disappointing. You can tell, right? I'm heartbroken over here. All right, we've got Mechanic Monday coming up next with Bill Broussard. So call in with all your car questions. It's 844-500-4242. A lot of people asking where they can find this. It is from the New York Times. And I'll tweet it out for everyone. We'll be right back.